This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
I am interested in studying critical habitats in the ocean that have been used and abused with shipping and drilling and fishing, and kind of figuring out ways for those areas to heal. My name is Vanessa Zobel, and I'm a postdoctoral researcher at Scripps Institution of Oceanography. I was born and raised in San Diego, and I spent so many days with my family playing and swimming in the ocean. And now I'm a scientist here at Scripps, and I'm hoping to figure out solutions on how to protect the modern ocean. So 90% of the ocean is pitch black. A lot of marine organisms have evolved to use sound as their primary mode of perceiving the world around them. I fell in love with acoustics because it's a way that we can learn about animals, and we can learn so much about them just by listening. We can learn about how many there are, what they're doing, and what threats they're facing, all just by listening. I wanted to study animals in a way that was non-invasive to them or their habitats. Our lab puts hydrophones, which are underwater recording devices, down into the ocean, and they can stay there for over a year, recording continuously. And we record all the sounds that pass by it, like whales, echolocating dolphins, ships, and we can disentangle all those different sounds to eavesdrop on the underwater world, even though we're not there to see it for ourselves. I'm excited to be a speaker at the Jeffrey B. Graham Perspective on Ocean Science Lecture Series.
Well, thanks everyone for coming, and thank you for having me. We'll be talking a little bit about ocean sound in general, how animals use the ocean to communicate with each other, and then some of the human threats that the ocean is facing and how that relates to acoustics too. And as I mentioned in the video, I'm a postdoctoral researcher in the Scripps Machine Listening Lab here at Scripps. I recently finished my PhD here as well. And here's some photos of out on the boats and working with the instruments, throwing them off the back of the boat, and then picking them up after they've recorded everything that we want to record. So 90% of the ocean looks like this, just completely pitch black. Can't see anything. It's not an optical world like we have on land. So animals have really evolved to use sound to communicate with each other and to transfer information when the sense of sight is taken away. So it's light diminishes at about 200 meters in the ocean. So they can see each other in the couple first layers, but after that, they're really relying on sound for everything else, like navigation, foraging, finding their food through echolocation, and communication and predator avoidance. So this is a little, there are some interactive bits of this talk, so just you can take your best guess. It's not a test or anything. So what happens to sound underwater? Raise your hand if you think it is 4 times faster. Okay, we got a couple hands. Raise your hand if you think it's 2 times slower. Okay. Raise your hand if you think it's the same speed. Awesome. Thank you guys so much for participating. It's actually 4 times faster in seawater than it is in air. Yeah, I think so too. So in air, it travels at about 340 meters per second. And underwater, it's about 1,500 meters per second. So it's a super efficient way to transfer information over long distances and really fast, rather than doing a visual cue. So we measure our sound in a couple different ways. One of the ways is by frequency of the sound. And frequency, you can kind of think of as pitch. So high frequencies, shorter wavelengths, kind of like a flute. whereas long wavelengths are lower frequency, lower pitch, kind of like a tuba. So that's one way that we think about sound and how we measure it when we're recording all of these different sounds that we're getting on our instruments, whether it's high pitch or low pitch. Another way that we measure sound is by the intensity or the amplitude, or kind of like the loudness of the sound. So some sounds that animal makes are really loud. A lot of them, most of them are. And it can be louder if the animal's closer, or it might be quieter if the animal's farther away. And we measure that with decibels. So it's measured differently underwater than in air, but here's just a kind of reference. In air, fireworks are about 140 decibels, while a refrigerator, the little sound of a refrigerator is about 40 decibels, and whispering is about 30 decibels. And whales are louder than that. They are off that scale. So I'll play some for you in a little bit, but they are using a lot of energy to produce these sounds and communicate in that way. So there's so many different types of animals in the ocean making sounds. I'll mostly be talking about marine mammals today, but fish and invertebrates also make sounds. Fish with their swim bladders can make sounds, and invertebrates like lobsters can scrape their appendages together to make sounds as well, and snapping shrimp too. But so many different sounds to disentangle down there. So we're gonna go over a few. First, we have this wonderful animal, the orca, killer whale, top predator of the ocean. They have been found to eat great white sharks. They've been found to eat stingrays. They've been found to eat large whales, like that fin whale that washed up in San Diego earlier this year with the orca bites on it. So these sounds that these animals make are high frequency, which you'll hear in a second. They whistle, they echolocate, they make clicks, and they make buzzes, which are kind of like clicks really close together. It sounds like a buzzing bee. So let's take a listen. So yeah, top predator of the ocean right there. And they sound like dolphins, and they are dolphins. They're the largest dolphin in the dolphin family. So even though they're called killer whales, fun fact, they are dolphins. And toothed whales, this group of animals that we'll be looking at first, or odontocetes, dont means teeth. These animals have teeth, and all of these toothed whales make the more high frequency sounds like echolocation, clicks. Some make whistles, but not all of them. So when you're seeing a toothed animal, or what you think might be a toothed animal, you can maybe think that they might be making some high frequency sounds. And when we have recording devices out in the ocean, which we have all over the world, we have a bunch in Southern California, all up and down Arctic, Antarctic, Hawaii, East Coast. When we hear a sound like this, then we can know it's an orca, and we don't have to be in the middle of the ocean with binoculars to make that call. Okay, next, short-beaked common dolphin. Let's take a listen. So very similar to the orca, right? Even though they're much smaller, orcas were actually feasting on these guys when the orcas were off our coast. And I think that they made a comeback recently. But yeah, so when the orcas were up here, they were feasting on their little cousins, and they were both squeaking away. short-beaked common dolphins, they come in very large pods, up to thousands. They're called super pods, and they're a mixes of adults and babies, and the babies are about the size of a football. They're super fast, so you can see them if you go whale watching. If there's a big, super big pod, then that's another cue that it might be a common dolphin. Okay, so sperm whale, Physeter macrocephalus. Macrocephalus. Okay, raise your hand if you think macro means big. Okay, cephalus. Does anyone know what that means? Head. You guys, wow, you don't need me here. Big head. That's what this animal was named after, its big head. Its head is a third of its body. And inside that head is a very large organ that's filled with oil that people used to use to have light in their house. But this organ in that big oil-filled sac is really good at propagating and amplifying sound out of its head. And that's how these animals are echolocating. They're shooting it out of its head. They have a structure in the nasal passage that releases air slowly, like if you're slowly releasing air out of a balloon, and it vibrates, and it will be, and it will amplify out that fat organ, and will rattle around in its head, and you'll get the first echolocation click, and it will bounce back and shoot out another one, and the time between those two clicks is a proxy for the size of the head. So if you know the time between the clicks, you can get an estimate of the head size and then the body size. So we can learn so much about what animals are there, how big they are, just by disentangling all their echolocation clicks underwater. I'm talking too much. Let me play the fun sounds. So very different than the dolphin, right? These are still toothed animals. They're not dolphins, though. So they just make clicks, these echolocation clicks. And this is, if you measure it a certain way, the loudest animal on Earth, louder than the blue whale, louder than the humpback, louder than a howler monkey, louder than a lion. This is the, so if you ever get that in a trivia question, now you'll know. But yeah, sperm whales are really cool. They don't make those whistles, but they can change the time in between their clicks, which you just heard kind of. There was some packets of different repetition of those clicks. And that's what people call codas. And they think that instead of whistling, they're using the time between their clicks to transfer information. And people haven't quite cracked the codas code, but they're working on it, and it's super interesting. These animals are really cool. So moving into another group of animals, mysticetes. Does anyone know what mysticete is? Mustache. Yeah, mustache. The mustached animals, they have baleen, which is the same material as our hair and our nails. Instead of teeth, they don't have any teeth. So they're just taking a big gulp of water, pushing the water out with their tongue, and filtering all that good krill and small bait fish that's staying in their mouths. So yes, baleen whales, different than toothed whales. They don't make those high frequency sounds. They don't echolocate that we know of. It's not really a whistle, which you'll hear soon. They're mostly like moans and groans and songs and grumbles is how people have characterized those calls so far. And I guess we're talking about scientific names today. Megaptera. Mega? Big? Optera? Wings. Yes, big wings. These are the winged whales. Their pectoral fins can get super long, and that's not common for all baleen whales. And the scalloping that you see on the front of their pectoral fins, that helps with hydrodynamics so they can cut through the water and use their long wings to kind of steer. Okay, humpback whales, let's hear. So I have some students that are really scared of that. I'm like, I go to bed to that. That's so relaxing. So this, they've had a multi-platinum record of humpback whale songs, which you can buy if you want. This is kind of the iconic whale song. They can sing like this for hours. They're right off of our coast singing, and they're only males sing that we know of, although males and females can both make some sort of sound, and they think it's male-male competition or males attracting females, but it's usually during around the breeding period that they sing like this. And the most fit males can sing in a certain way where if when there's a natural break in the song, that's when they'll take a breath. So it kind of seems like they're never breathing. So that must be a pretty fit male if they never have to breathe. And the female might want that one. Okay, so another baleen whale, minke whale. Minke whale. Sounds kind of like a foghorn to me. But yes, minke whales have this white spot on their pectoral fin, the fin up here, that some people call minke mittens. And they're the smallest baleen whale, and they're right off of our coast too. They're more rare to see though. When scientists were first starting to record the ocean, some people thought that this was a submarine or they didn't know where it was coming from. And then as they kept recording, they were like, oh no, it's getting closer. And then it was a minke whale. So yeah, when folks were first beginning to listen to the ocean, that's the first step. It's what animal makes what sound. And people have done a lot of work out on boats with dunk hydrophones. When you see an animal, you put a hydrophone in the water and that's how you can see which animal makes which sound. And now that we have this catalogs and libraries of all the different sounds that these animals make, we can now go back to those catalogs and just by looking at the data can see what those animals are without having to go out there, although it's amazing to go out there, of course. And we know almost every sound that we hear at this point. We have catalogs for every species except for one, which is the Perrin's beaked whale. This animal has never been seen alive. So that's why all the other beaked whales they're really hard to study because they are down underwater for 3 to 4 hours. They come up super squirrely, take a couple breaths of air, then go back down. But this Perrin's beaked whale, we've never seen. And that's the only sound that we don't know what it is in our data. So by process of elimination, we're making a guess. But until we see that animal and put a hydrophone dunked into the water, we won't be able to know for sure. They've washed up dead a couple times, so we know that they exist. But they haven't been seen alive. So still many more mysteries out there to uncover. Okay, fin whale, my favorite animal. Second largest whale on Earth after the blue whale. So let's take a listen. And this is actually sped up 5 times because if it wasn't, it would be really hard for humans to hear. Sounds kind of like a heartbeat to me. I love it. So yes, fin whales. They are also right off our coast. There's a lot of fin whales and they're very chatty. So we can't even like pick out the calls because they're overlapping all of each other. And fin whales, have you guys heard of the loneliest whale? The loneliest whale that sings at a frequency that the other whales don't sing at. There's actually probably many of those whales, but people think it's a bluefin hybrid. So maybe these fin whales have a kind of funky cousin out there too, making a funkier song. But that's the fin whale song. And now I do have this is just for fun. It's not a real quiz. But so I'm just going to play a song or a I'm not going to play a song. I'm going to play a sound for you guys, and then you can take a guess, and I'll just say hands up for bowhead whales, hands up for spinner dolphin, and you can raise your hand and kind of think about what we learned so far. So toothed whales make higher frequency sounds like whistles and clicks. Baleen whales, the larger whales, they make lower frequency sounds like songs and moans and groans. And then you obviously can't see if they have teeth, but that's something that you can think of by their body type and whether they're a dolphin or if it doesn't say dolphin on there. Okay, so here's the first sound. Okay, raise your hand for bowhead whale. Wow, fast learners. Raise your hand for spinner dolphin. Okay. Bowhead whale, great job. Okay, good job, y'all. So next one, maybe a little bit harder, maybe not, I don't know, we'll see. We have the short-finned pilot whale and the blue whale. So I'll play the sound now. Okay, raise your hand for the short-finned pilot whale. And how'd you know that? How'd you know? Does anyone want to say what they heard? It's higher pitch, higher frequency, higher echo. You heard clicks. Blue whales that we know of don't click. So great work. Great work, y'all. Okay, so yes, short-finned pilot whale. Okay, and this one is kind of a trick question, but I just had to include this because it's fun. And these animals are not on our coast. The Hawaiian monk seals in Hawaii, Weddell seals in Antarctica. So it's probably just a guess. I think if you look at the photo, you might be able to tell, but we'll see. Seals make sounds too. Okay, raise your hand for the monk seal and raise your hand for the Weddell seal. Okay, and the answer is monk seal. good job. So monk seals are really cool. They're really endangered. They are trying to protect them. If you ever see one on the beach in Hawaii, they have like caution tape cones out. You are not allowed to go near them at all. And they're seen, there's been a couple of occurrences with them with an eel stuck in their nose. Has anyone seen that before? Yeah. And eel is one of their prey sources. So they think that the animal's trying to eat the eel, and then as the last chance at an escape, the eel goes out the nose. And so veterinarians have had to go down on the beach and get this eel out of this monk seal's nose. You can look up photos, it's crazy. Okay, so thank you for your participation in the quiz. That was very fun. Great work. So there's many animals in the ocean that are making a bunch of sounds. But we also, as humans, use the ocean as a resource to get the shoes that are on our feet and our cell phones and everything that we own that once came to us on a container ship. We use the ocean for drilling and to get our energy that powers our energy needs and for Navy operation. So with those things, we inject some noise pollution into the ocean. And that can cause some impacts on marine mammals, like it can mask their communication. It would be as if you were trying to have a conversation at a rock concert rather than in your kitchen. So masking their communication, they might have to talk a little bit louder, or they might just stop and go somewhere else. Physiological impacts. There's been seen increases in stress hormone levels associated with ocean noise or increases in noise pollution. And it's really hard to study that in the modern ocean or since we've been recording, because there's not a lot of times in history when shipping or human activity in the ocean stops. One of the occurrences of that was 9/11, when shipping stopped on the East Coast very drastically. They had blubber samples of North Atlantic right whales before 9/11, and then they took blubber samples right after. And they found that once all the human activity stopped in the ocean very drastically, the stress hormone levels decreased by a lot. So behavioral changes, animals might leave a certain area if there is a lot of noise. And if it's an area where they have a lot of prey, then they might leave and go to an area where there's less prey for them. Or they might stay based on their evolution. Container shipping and drilling hasn't been active for as long as these animals have evolved. And they might not have the opportunity to even, you know, comprehend what's going on. So they might stay in that area and then just get chronically exposed to this noise. So there's been hundreds of studies on that topic at this point, ranging from many different species, toothed whales, baleen whales, seals, sea lions, walruses, and even fish and invertebrates too. So here's just a little movie of all these ships out in the water. You can see how many containers there are, gas, vehicles, everything that we also need. And ocean acoustics people weren't really recording the ocean until about the 1960s. And at that point, there was already hundreds of thousands of ships on the ocean. So we really don't know what the ocean sounded like before that. And it's hard to have a time in history to be able to study that. Okay, so after all those beautiful whale sounds, I will show you what a container ship off of the port of Los Angeles sounds like. Buckle up. So, yeah, right off the coast. That's right. That's recorded from the Santa Barbara Channel here, that right about here, right off the shipping lanes from the port of Los Angeles. So you can kind of get a sense of how loud those sounds are that are injected into the ocean from humans. And I'll turn to this location as kind of a case study for what I'll go over next. It's just right off the coast of Santa Barbara, Los Angeles, and we have this amazing National Marine Sanctuary, this marine protected area called the Channel Islands National Marine Sanctuary that bounds these islands and a couple islands south as well. And in this area, there's kelp forests, abundant wildlife, whales and dolphins that frequent this area often, and it's protected under the National Marine Sanctuaries Act. These two animals and so many more, blue whales and humpback whales, have a really important feeding area that's also located in this area. And blue whales will come back every summer and feast on krill right from this area. And then humpback whales, you can see them year round, but in spring and fall, they're also eating lots of krill and small bait fish as well. And these two biologically important areas are protected under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, and these two animals are also considered endangered as well. So intersecting all of those boundaries are the shipping lanes or traffic separation scheme that transports goods to and from the Port of Los Angeles and the Port of Long Beach, which are the first and the second busiest shipping ports in the U.S. and entire Western Hemisphere. So lots of stuff going on. That's how we get our Amazon packages. It's a human wildlife conflict or human and wildlife situation. That's super interesting because of course we need to trade as countries. But we also need to protect those areas as well, which we'll get into. So my lab made some ocean noise models, which showed we modeled what the ocean would sound like if there was no ships in this area, if it was just geophysical sound from wind and rain. And we saw that when we were comparing that with what the ocean actually sounded like, it was a lot quieter pre-industrialization. You can see in the modern ocean noise on the right, there's those big patches of red, which are very loud sounds. So the color represents the sounds, with hotter colors like red and orange creating louder sounds, and blue and green are quieter sounds. So, and it's very widespread too. The black lines are the little ships, and it spreads and propagates very far beyond those track lines of the vessels. So what do? We need to reduce that noise, right? These are protected areas. There's animals that rely on sounds for their daily life functions. So we need to come up with some solutions, which we'll be moving on to next, my favorite part, my research here. So there's so many different solutions. I'll just be going over a couple today. But one of the solutions is vessel speed reduction. So our lab has been partnering with the Protecting Blue Whales and Blue Skies program, which operates off of Los Angeles initially, but now extends up to Northern California as well. They haven't come down to San Diego yet, but I think off the port of San Diego, which would also be a really good opportunity to slow down vessels, and off our coast as well, because blue whales are out there. There's been so many sightings. So I think they're expanding, and I think coming down to San Diego would be awesome. So within these boundaries, they incentivize cargo vessels 300 gross tons or more to slow their vessels, to slow their speeds to 10 knots or less. And they have, they began in about 2014, and they really didn't have a lot of participation, because as you could imagine, trying to get Maersk with a bunch of Amazon packages to slow down is not, time is money for the shipping industry. So they're multi-billion-dollar industry, and you better have a good reason for them to slow down if it's not regulated. So there wasn't a lot of companies involved in the beginning, but now this was 2022. There's even more now, but over 600 vessels are involved, and over 20 companies are involved. And the big companies like Maersk and Costco and CMA CGM. And there's no regulations on the U.S. West Coast, even though there are on the U.S. East Coast. But interestingly enough, the participation on the U.S. West Coast is almost equal to the regulatory compliance on the U.S. East Coast. But having these two programs, you kind of have to have it a nationwide situation. Otherwise, shipping companies can dodge ports that have these programs and just zip into a port that doesn't. So that's kind of one thing that they're thinking about right now. So right on these shipping lanes, they have a vessel speed reduction program. And we saw, you can see on the right plot, that when they speed is on the x-axis here and ship noise is on the y-axis. So when they slowed vessels down, their noise got lower. And you get about a 1 dB per knot relationship. So if you slow down one knot, you get a subtraction of 1 dB. So if you're going 20 knots to 15 knots, you get 5 dB. So that's pretty good, decibels that is. And so we worked with this program in the Santa Barbara Channel, and now they've expanded since into Northern California off of the Port of San Francisco and Port of Oakland. So we'll be quantifying those results too, and then hopefully they can expand even more, Port of San Diego or more ports beyond that as well. So vessel speed reduction is really good when you're thinking of reducing noise regionally. If you want to reduce noise in a specific area like a national marine sanctuary or a protected area, but vessels might not go 10 knots for their whole duration of their transit across the Pacific. That would increase times by months. So people in the International Maritime Organization and the International Whaling Commission have tried to think of more an international or global approach to reducing ocean noise. And so we partnered with one of the biggest shipping companies in the world, Maersk, that underwent a redesign of their very large vessels. So this was a billion-dollar effort put on by Maersk themselves, and it was they were trying to increase fuel efficiency. So reducing noise wasn't on the agenda, but as scientists, we were like, oh, you changed the bow and changed the propellers and the engine? Let's see what that sounds like. And so we found about 50 transits of these vessels pre-retrofit and 50 post-retrofit. And so ship noise is on the lines here with frequency on the x-axis and ship noise on the y-axis. And post-retrofit, this red line here, we got a reduction in noise in the low frequencies. So maybe a reduction that would help out those baleen whales that make those low moans and groans and songs. But there was no reduction for the high frequencies, so potentially wouldn't help out those dolphins or the sperm whales. But now that people are talking about underwater radiated noise from vessels more, conversations about how to incorporate designs that reduce noise when they're doing these redesign efforts is being talked about a little bit more. The San Diego Bay just got an electric engine, an electric powered tugboat. So seeing how different engine types reduces noise in what frequencies and what animals that may be helpful for is another thing to consider. And then there's so many designs coming out right now. Like I saw a container ship with sails on it, which they wouldn't necessarily take away the propellers. We'll always have to chop water a little bit, but you could kind of think about it as like the Prius of the container ship, a hybrid system where they can use some power by sail and some power by propulsion as well. So yeah, we did this project with Maersk, but doing it with other shipping companies or the San Diego tugboats or all these different designs would be super cool. And the hydrogen hybrid system that the Scripps vessel, the new Scripps vessel is going to be a hydrogen hybrid system. So seeing what that vessel sounds like in comparison to non-hybrid systems will also be super interesting for a project here at Scripps. Okay, so little current event. Going on right now, going back to our area in off of the Channel Islands National Marine Sanctuary, the Coast Guard, every 10 to 15 to 20 years, has a port access route study where they can modify shipping lanes in order to, for maritime safety, for more efficiency, for protecting animals or protected areas of concern. And there's one going on right now. So the proposed modification to this area is a fairway that wraps around the southern area of the Channel Islands, hugs it pretty tightly, as you can see. So we kind of wanted to think about this proposed fairway because the port access route studies only happens every 15 years, so we wanted to make sure we could figure out the best way to implement it before and not have to wait another 15 years, hopefully, to make a change if we needed to. So we modeled what the ocean would sound like with that proposed fairway implemented. So instead of waiting for it to happen in a couple years, we said, okay, let's just model it so we can make sure it's not too noisy, or if we can move it and see if that would be helpful. So we modeled it and we compared it to what the current schemes are in that area. So here you have the shipping lanes in the north, and there's a smaller lane that gets about 20% of the transits. And then we compared the Point Magoo fairway, the proposed fairway, with a couple different options as it's proposed on the top. A little modification for it to go straight in the middle, and then a buffer between the fairway and the southernmost boundary of the Channel Islands National Marine Sanctuary. And because we're scientists and because we can model whatever we want, we also modeled it with that main traffic separation scheme just gone. We said, let's just see what it would sound like with all the traffic just on the south and not cutting through those boundaries, which is not proposed on the port access route study, but we just did it to see. So we subtracted the current scheme from all these different simulations, and we found that if you give a little modification or a buffer to this area, there's gonna be less, so sorry, I'll back up. Red is an increase in noise, blue is a decrease in noise, and with that Point Magoo fairway, there is some radiation into the Channel Islands National Marine Sanctuary, but if you give it a little bit of a buffer, there's about no difference. So giving it a buffer might be helpful. We also found that taking the traffic separation scheme out and just having the southern lane there, you get a huge reduction within the blue whale and humpback whale biologically important areas at the expense of increasing sound levels by a lot out on the southern side of the islands. So something to think about, but just wanted to bring up that current event. So lots of marine spatial planning efforts going off our coast with speed reduction, with new designs, with routing. It's a very active part of research here at Scripps, so stay tuned for more. Okay, sound is really important for these animals. Animals, they use it for daily life functions like communication, navigation, and foraging. Noise pollution exists in the ocean and can negatively impact those animals that use sound. But there's so many solutions that exist and are being implemented and are being studied around the world. Speed reduction is one of those efforts that reduces noise more regionally, but new designs are also being engineered all the time to figure out how to kind of spread that reduction globally and internationally. And then marine spatial planning as well, how we can figure out how we can spatially put everything so that all the animals and humans and communities that use the ocean as a resource can share it as sustainably as possible. So thank you so much for having me.
Actually, two questions.
Sure, yeah.
Is the Navy working with you?
We do work with the Navy to figure out, that's mostly mid-frequency active sonar and sonar for their naval operations to kind of figure out how to do testing in times and areas where there will be the least amount of mammals.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the other question is, if you move those shipping lines further south,
yeah,
won't you be impacting the southern Channel Islands like San Nicolas and Santa Barbara and Catalina?
Yes, it won't be touching those islands, but it's definitely moving the lanes farther near that boundary. And other things that I didn't get a chance to mention, those areas are, there's other species present besides blue whales and humpback whales here. So beaked whales and fin whales and dolphins are all in that area. So including additional boundaries and additional species will be super important to kind of figure out how to wedge lanes in areas that best benefits all those species in a also changing climate and changing ocean conditions where all those habitats are also changing all the time. So good point. Yes.
Hi. So I use my AirPods all the time when I'm walking, and I use the noise, sound canceling.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering, is there any technology, anybody looking at, is there a way to do noise cancellation around like the MPAs?
Yeah, good question. That design is not like commercialized yet. I think it's super expensive, but it does exist, and I think it's mostly used by like military vessels so far. But that it's definitely a topic of discussion. And there's other ways to reduce noise as well, like bubble curtains, if you've heard of that, where you can put air bubbles and air attenuates noise really quickly. So if you have a curtain of bubbles, the sound will not be able to pass through that as well. So there's other, and then people are wrapping carpets around the wind turbine masts, and there's so many different designs like that too, or even different coatings. But yeah, the active noise cancellation, it's not super widespread yet, but I think people are talking about it. Yeah.
Two questions.
Sure, yeah.
How have large language models been applied to the acoustic catalogs? And then second, has the Navy ballistic subs or boomers been used as platforms to collect sounds, which are one of the few vessels that are on deep in the deep ocean on a regular basis?
Yeah. So the first question, I think that people are doing that with codas, with the sperm whale codas. There's a group that's trying to use those models to kind of disentangle the what the codas are trying to convey. In our lab, we have machine learning algorithms, and if this isn't answering your question, feel free to ask it again. But we have catalogs that have been used to train neural nets and language, you can kind of call it a language model, to we can run it on our data right as it gets out of the ocean and can label the different sounds automatically. And I don't think there will ever be a replacement for looking at data, because we get instances where maybe, whoa, a beluga click off of Hawaii, where a machine learning algorithm might make that mistake if there's a certain situation. So it's always important to have a human also kind of supervising that. But so far, we haven't really been able to implement context into machine learning algorithms, but that's getting talked about too. And then I'm sure there are recording devices on those subs. We don't get that data, but I'm sure there is that data.
Could you describe the incentivization you're using to get the vessels to slow down?
Good question. Yes. Okay. So when it was first started, they gave, to kind of make the shipping companies perk their ear ups, they said, we will give you a financial reward. And a financial reward to this coalition of nonprofits was about $5,000 to $20,000 based on a shipping company's level of participation, which is nothing for these shipping companies. It's like you to pay someone to cash that check is more expensive than that check. So they stopped cashing it. And then they said, hey, we realize you don't cash the check. Like, what's up with that? And they're like, we don't do it for the check. Like, that's not enough money for us. We just want to do it. And then they also give a lot of public recognition. There was a New York Times article about that program recently in the past couple months. They've been in the LA Times. A lot of positive public recognition where they'll put their shipping company name in the newspaper. And they also give them a whale tail trophy. Which they really like. So yeah, it's all positive public recognition. It used to be financial incentives, but I don't think they're giving money anymore just because the shipping companies aren't taking it.
If the company is potentially drilling for oil, could an animal that doesn't relocate and stays there for prey lose their hearing?
Really good question. So temporary damage to hearing is another impact that these animals can face. There's both permanent threshold shifts, which is that permanent damage that you were talking about, where an animal will entirely lose its hearing. And then it can also cause the hearing structures to break, like your inner ear bones. And then there's also temporary threshold shifts, where the animal will temporarily lose its hearing, and then it will come back, kind of like if you went to a concert and your hearing's kind of muffled, but when you wake up in the morning, then it's okay. So there's two different types of hearing damage that can happen if an animal is super close to impulsive or really loud sound. Yeah, good question.
I have a question about its... with the decrease in noise, if we're ever able to decrease some of this ambient noise from, you know, humans and stuff, would we worry about more ship strikes with whales?
Oh, really good question. So if they're quiet, is that bad? Because then the whales won't hear them coming, and then they'll get hit. So that is a really good question. And the technologies and the operations that we're talking about, even though some vessel designers are calling their ships silent, they are not silent. And 5 decibels is a lot, but it's still very loud. So if we, sorry, I can't see you, but I promise I'm talking to you. So we don't want to reduce them too much, but the at least the designs that I spoke about and the operations that I spoke about, those ships are still definitely making noise. And it's also from some of the behaviors that we've seen these animals take, a lot of the animals, even if a loud ship is coming, they still do not move because it's not a part of their evolution or natural history to know even how to respond to that. Because, and it also depends on the behavior that they're doing, but say for feeding, they will not, from many studies we've seen so far, they will not leave an area, and I'm talking about the big baleen whales, they will not but leave an area for even if a ship is coming right to them, if they can get a big gulp of food. If they're transiting, they've seen some of them kind of dodge a little bit, but it's really not a part of their natural behavior to know how to respond. And if they do get hit, there's not a lot of opportunity to learn how to not get hit again. but ship strikes, the vessel speed reduction program, that's another one of the co-benefits of noise reduction in addition to air pollution emission reductions in port cities. So, and there's been a lot of vessel strikes in San Diego this year. There was a struck fin whale in San Diego Bay, and we're actually have the skeleton, are hoping to put the skeleton together because you could see the bow of the ship going right, really hitting it. So hopefully we can show people how damaging that can be as well.
So we're going to take 2 more quick questions over here. We've got a young lady here and then this gentleman.
Cool. So I was wondering if the newer generations of whales and other marine species, have they started to gain a little bit of tolerance to the noise, and if we didn't take any measures to stop the noise, do you think that newer generations would just slowly, it might be unhealthy, but they would just slowly start getting used to the noise pollution?
Really good question. It's so hard. Maybe you should do a PhD on that. I think you should. But it's hard to tell because there's so many things changing in the ocean. You have ocean warming, you have ocean deoxygenation, you have changes in, or more frequent and stronger marine heat waves, and you have increasing ocean noise. So whether animals are responding, what animals are responding to is hard to disentangle with all those other things that are going on as well. But some researchers have found that whales will do certain things when they're in the presence of noise, like increasing the amplitude of their sound, so kind of like shouting over the sound. And that's called the Lombard effect. And then also changing the frequency of their sounds to kind of get out of the frequency of ship noise. So I don't know if that's if those changes will benefit them. But yeah, I guess we'll see. These are super long-lived animals. They can live like 80 years, 50 to 80 years. So those studies are also hard because you have to wait multiple generations. And we've only been studying the ocean in depth for so long. So I think that will be super cool to study moving forward.
Last question.
Yeah.
Yes. ship strikes are a growing problem, as you point out. And I'm wondering if one of the problems, of course, is that the whales have evolved to pick up particular frequencies, and other frequencies they either can't hear at all, or they're much lower.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if there's a way to send out signals from the ships that it wouldn't be damaging, but would nonetheless say, here we are at various clear frequencies that would affect the most obvious whale species.
Yeah, really good question. And they do that. I sometimes think about shipping lanes and this topic in as the same way or similar to like road ecology. So they do that for like deer on roads. Well, they'll send out a little light so before a car comes so that the deer can get out of the way before they get hit by the car. And people have thought about that, putting a bell or a pinger on a ship so that they can get out of the way before the ship comes. And I think that, yeah, whales haven't really responded either way. And then also I think that some people are weary to add more noise to the ocean because they're like, it's already too noisy. So adding more, but yeah, I think that that's like another solution and we should be thinking about all these different techniques to try to best and maybe some of these things in combination with each other too. So good idea.
Well, Vanessa, I want to thank you again. That was wonderful talk.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.